That's right, ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, welcome back once again. We're here for the Parish of the Patriot show, episode number 194, closing in on 200. I need to quit mentioning that because people are going to, when 200 rolls around, people are going to roll around and expect like something special, and it's just going to be the same old thing. You know, it's kind of like how when you get old, like when you're young, you know, your birthday's a big deal. You know, I turned 16, I turned 18, I turned 21. But when you're like, I'm turning, you know, 50. When you get to be my age, people go around, they say, happy birthday. And you're like, what? It's your birthday today. Oh, yeah. It's probably going to be like that. You know, it's going to be like, yeah, show number 200. It's going to be just like show number 199. You know, maybe I'm not even planning to use the number 200 as an excuse to shill for a few more shekels. I put a little more in the offering plate. I don't know. Anyway, it is a kind of a landmark in my mind, you know, that we've gotten the congregation together for like 200 episodes. Because like if nobody was listening, we wouldn't be. Like if Sven like got with me and is like, so damn, yeah, about your show numbers, they've dwindled quite a bit. And it'll be like, well, how much have they dwindled? Well, your audience is zero. Literally, like, nobody hits play. Nobody downloads your crap. Nobody wants to hear it. I would just be like, well, it's time for me to exit stage right. See, nobody want to hear this. If there was five people listening, I'd keep doing it for y'all. Because that's just how I am. This show, we get past, we do ask that you drop something in the plate. Because I don't have anything behind a paywall. I don't have any of this members only content. There's nothing wrong with doing that. I'm not being critical. People that do that, I understand it. But I like to put it all out there. It is where it is. We pass the plate around, ask if you get something out of it. You know, put something in the plate. If you don't get anything out of it, don't. You know, if you're like, your show sucks, I ain't giving you a dime. Well, that's just fine. But, you know, and maybe one show you don't like, you know. But if you do hear a show and it's like, man, that show was fire, you know, take that fire and drop a few dollars in the plate. It makes a difference for me. We don't do PayPal, which is good. You know, I'm a lifetime banned from PayPal for years ago, which is now a blessing in disguise, because now they're saying they're going to take $2,500 at their own discretion out of your account. You know, they went away and now they brought it back. They somehow just going to take your money from you. We don't do that. We don't have none of that garbage, but we do have Bitcoin. Which is going down in value, which means you can send some. And you know, for those of you who don't want to do Bitcoin, you know, we got snail mail. That doesn't get any easier than snail mail. You ain't got no excuse, my guys. I understand if I didn't have snail mail, you'd be like, well, I don't want to understand no Bitcoin or Monero. We got Monero. I want to understand. But see, I could understand that. But see, now I got snail mail. I got people be like, I still once in a while have somebody say, well, I can't really figure out how to do that cryptocurrency. It's like, do you know how to address an envelope? We got that. Got email down there where you can drop your notes. And if you have a different cryptocurrency, like Ethereum or something, I mean, just drop me a note. I can get you an address for that. And by the way, you know, I have in the past have had one or two people ask me for, you know, a non-public Bitcoin address to send to. And if you're one of those people, please drop me an email. I need to give you a new address. I'm moving Walter. I mean, it's not a problem. But I sent Bitcoin and got lost. No, it didn't. I'm just trying to rearrange my wallets a little bit, just kind of personal housekeeping for me. But if you get a chance, drop me a line and I'll give you a new non-public Bitcoin address. With all that having been said, I'm sorry. I kind of tarried. I tarried there for a bit. I tarried about for a bit. Let's get into the listener supporter mailbag in no particular order. I just stack these up. I just stack these up and we go them. Just go as we get to them. Dan, I hope you and yours are doing well. We made it through October with no surprises. Looking forward to Thanksgiving, most likely the only Christian holiday the nation celebrates. God bless. And that's from Tony, and I appreciate it. Yes, we're down. I don't know, you know, is Thanksgiving really Christian anymore either? Is it like, you know, just about Pocahontas and a turkey? I mean, do people, I don't know, do people get together as they should, as families? I hope so. I hope y'all are. I hope you find the opportunity. It can be a pain. I remember being a kid growing up, you know, and I've said this before. We used to have family reunions. You know, and all your extended family would get together like once a year or at least once every couple of years. You'd hold a family reunion. It might just be at somebody's house. And it wasn't a big house. But you'd have these family reunions. You'd see people, your relatives, your cousins. Most people don't even know their cousins. But you'd see all your cousins and your kinfolk. You get together. You'd meet relatives that you didn't even know existed. Nobody does that. Nobody does that anymore. And sadly, it's getting where people don't even get together for things like Thanksgiving like they should anymore. It's a shame. It's a shame because it makes a connection. You know, and I just have to wonder with all the COVID nonsense, you know, the COVID lockdowns we had several years back, if that hasn't exaggerated, if that hasn't made it worse. You'd think it'd make things better, but now people just they have that excuse, we want to stay safe. There's still a virus out there. Are you quadruple vaxxed? GPD, keep the faith. I hope this helps. So that's from Mr. T. And yes, it helps. Everything helps. Every little bit. Look, I don't ask people to give their life savings up. Step up and pay those tithes, people. That's from Andy. I appreciate it, Andy. That's his words, not mine. Andy's been with us a long time. Andy's been around a long time. I tell you what, Andy's been... And he's been with it for years. Hey there, Grandpa. I'm not dead. Sorry, it's been a minute, been a bit busy. Have not even had a chance to catch up on the shows. No idea how the cancer treatments are going. Hope to get caught up soon. All the best. And that's from Jackie. Well, you know, the word is that, I almost made a joke about it. I don't even want to make a joke out of it. Everything's going good. If you haven't caught up, if you just tuned into this show, I just recently, in fact, we talked about it last week, just got results from my latest scan, and I survived the kidney cancer surgery, and that all is looking good, and I just went and got the results from my latest scan, which I have to do these scans for the ongoing future, and so far, so good. Everything comes back, which, as I said last week, I was a little worried because I went in there and weighed me, and I lost 9 pounds, and I've been eating like I shouldn't be eating. I've been eating like, you know, I start getting worried, like I'm guilty of the sin of gluttony. I need to quit eating, need to quit snacking, you know? Now the weather turns cold, it's hard not to be snacky. I get real snacky, get bored. But I lost 9 pounds and I'm like, uh-oh. Because it ain't like I've been cutting back on what I eat. Hopefully I don't have a big tumor in there I'm feeding. But no, everything looking good. So thank you. Thank you for asking. Thank you for your support. That gets us through the listener support. The listener supporter mailbag this week. So thank you. Thank you all once again. Thank goodness elections are over. Hallelujah. Elections are over. Y'all didn't think I could sing it because I can't. Elections are over. We don't have to hear about that crap for a little while now. Well, actually, it's still ongoing. You know, I used to find certain aspects of election season entertaining. Namely, I used to get such a good laugh. But, you know, back when I say used to, I used to get laughed at because, you know, I don't know. It was just more lighthearted, you know. The government, it was more fun when it wasn't evident that the government hated us so bad and really wanted to kill us. It was kind of the impression that we have now. But we didn't have that back then. One of the things I always found in kind of humorous about election season is the ads, you know. The campaign ads, because they used to come out, you'd have somebody come out, usually a woman, and kvetch about, you know, these campaign ads are just way too negative. And it's like, that's like the one interesting thing about election season. Straight up. That's like the one interesting thing about election season. Don't be down on me on these negative ads. Of course, they all negative now, pretty much. But they're not negative in the funny way. You know, they're just like hateful. You know, I don't know how to explain it. But I used to always find it funny because you'd have these ads and it would be coming out like, you know, Linda Jones, she's, you know, a hardcore liberal. She's soft on crime and she wants to murder babies. Yeah. Jim Jones, on the other hand, he's a family man. He fears God and shows him sitting there, you know, surrounded by children and flowers. And you know, it used to be funny because it's also fake. But you know, it was kind of entertaining. See, I don't find anything entertaining about election season anymore. There's nothing fun about it. anymore, because now, like, the government wants to, I don't know, you know, turn your kids into homosexuals and kill you and make you eat bugs. And now you can't buy gas or food. So they want to destroy us. They want to make us live in a pod. And so it's not very entertaining anymore, because they kind of gotten sinister about things. Made it listen to, I hate it. I hate election season. And they go on. And every year of my life, that's been an election year. And I've been around a lot longer than probably most of you. Every year that was an election year was the most important election ever. If there was an election in, I don't know, 1994, and it may not have been. I'm too lazy to look it up. If there was an election in 1994, I can promise you it was the most important election ever. Every election, they hype it up and tell everybody it's the most important election ever, because, see, they got to keep you buying into the system. Got to keep you buying in. You can change it if you just vote. Just got to vote harder. Only thing I remember ever being changed, and I've said this before, and y'all laugh, but, you know, before the mid-1990s, they had a nationwide 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. It's the only thing that changed. They had that whole contract with America thing going, and we voted Team R into office in the 1990s. And the only thing we got out of that contract with America was they abolished the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. And y'all can sit there and laugh, but that was a big deal. You go out, drive across the desert. You go out there in Texas on I-10 between El Paso and Fort Stockton. You get on that sumbitch and try to drive 55. It is just, there's nothing to look at. It's a horrible drive. You just drive 55. I think the speed limit on that interstate now is like 80. And people still getting pulled over for speeding. Why? Because there ain't nothing. People just want to get there. People just want to get there. They're not looking at me, straight shot. Back then, you were supposed to drive 55. That's the only thing that voting has ever accomplished in my lifetime. It accomplished getting rid of the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. It's always funny getting an old car, an old pickup from the 80s. And, you know, you look at the speedometer and it only goes to 85. And 55 usually has like a different color. It's red, or it's got a circle around it. And young people be looking at that and they'll be like, why is there a circle around 55? Y'all young people now, and y'all like, hey, my dad's got an 86, I don't know, Tornado out there, whatever. And they all run out there and look, and he'd be like, I'll be damned. There's a circle around the 55. Now y'all know, that's your little bit of trivia. See, its show is educational. Now you know why the 55 on your speedometer, on your dad's speedometer, is a circle around it, or is a different color than all the other numbers. And of course, you get that if it's in the early 80s, especially all throughout the 80s, and you look down on the bottom, and they also had the metric down there, so you could know what kilometers per hour you were going, which no one ever looked at, but because they were telling us we were all going to the metric system. That never happened. I always laugh about that, because we think that, trying to like undermine parents, you know, with the kids and the schools is a new thing, and it ain't no new. I mean, it is new that it's at this extreme. But like when I was a kid, I remember being in like elementary school and we were having to learn the metric system for some ungodly reason. And I remember the teachers telling us that we had to learn it. We were like second, third grade. And they're telling us, y'all got to learn this, because by 1982, we're going on. If we're not dead from the incoming ice age from climate change, then by 1982, the U.S. is going to the metric system. And you see, your parents are stupid. They don't know the metric system. They're not going to know if they're breaking the speed limit. Yes, they told us this. They're not going to know if they're breaking the speed limit. They're going to have to ask you, son, how many kilometers an hour am I supposed to be going? Like they don't have, as if they didn't have the little numbers on there. We're going to go the metric. See, back then, the government still acted like they kind of actually, the people kind of had a little feedback. They were kind of like, well, nobody wants this metric system bullshit, so we're just going to let that go. They finally kind of just abandoned that. But they don't do that now. Now they just cram everything down their throats. We're going to put your kid in a dress and cut his dingus off. Y'all going to go along with it. But back then, we didn't ever go on the metric system because the people didn't want to go along with that. My, how times have changed. Election season, I hate that. I do. I hate it. It was weeks and weeks, months and months of the most importantest election ever. And now, I don't know, you know, and you got these people I don't know. And they're like all bent. Because you get the media narrating to them that, you know, well, what happened to your red wave of Republicans that were going to get swept in there? The Democrats are going to get swept out. That just fizzled. Ha ha ha. These snarky TV commentators. See? Because you're supposed to pretend like elections are real. No, I didn't vote. Don't be coming at me with, well, you can't bitch about the system because you didn't vote. No, my non-vote is a vote. It's a vote of no confidence in the entire system. Imagine them having to do, they do this vote fraud now. And you got people, what I find hard to imagine is that you got people acting like it's real. And I don't mean like the cheaters, because of course they're going to act like it's real. You expect that. I'm talking about the marks. I'm talking about the victims of the cheating, and they're all running around acting like, man, I can't believe these idiots are voting for the Democrats when the economy's a mess and we're fixing to have World War III and they're turning our kids into trannies. But they're not. I mean, come on, how do you not know these things are fake? You know, because we have this two-party system, and you get a choice of pre-selected candidate for Team B, pre-selected candidate from Team R. I find, you know, because if we had real candidates, and I always tell about, I'm up front, people say, well, when are you voting again? I say, I'm voting again. I've decided that the next time I vote, if we have like a state candidate, say you've got somebody running for governor, and he's running strictly on a platform of secession. I'm seceding this state from the U.S. We're going to go our own way. I will dust off the voter ID card and go vote. They can hoax the election all they want to, but I'm voting for that. That's when I'm voting. Because right now, under our current system, you can vote for pre-selected candidate D, pre-selected candidate R. And, you know, everybody always like, well, you know, you wind up in this situation where you're voting for the lesser two evils. But you're still voting for evil. You know, as a Christian believer, I don't think I can do that in good conscience. God, I voted for this guy because he wasn't quite as evil as the other guy. See, it's like saying, I might have voted for hell, but I voted for like the number three demon. I didn't vote for Satan himself. That's a maybe not the best analogy. I don't know. No, because the system. And it just puts me off because then now, of course, now it's really aggravating because we have this massive election fraud and you see it on the graphs and it's obvious what they do. You know, they just when I my whole most of my entire life. OK, most of my entire life, you had election night. And that night, if you stay, you might have to stay up till 11, 12 o'clock at night. But that night, you knew who won. You knew who won. And we were all vote. Everybody in the country was voting on paper ballots and putting them in a box. You had literal vote counters. And you were putting the votes in a box. And yet that night, 11, 12 o'clock at night, maybe 1 in the morning at the latest, you knew who won. If worse than worse, you got up the next morning, turned on the news, and you knew who won what race. And now what do we got? Now we got all these machines and you vote on the machine. And, you know, that is the whole excuse for that is it speeds it up because you don't have to have people physically counting ballots. And yet now what? They're telling us that the normal now is that you're not going to know who won an election, who won a race for weeks, days, possibly weeks until you're going to know because they got to cheat. No, you know, we're not allowed to say that. We're probably, they're literally threatening people for saying that now. That's where we're at, threatening you for speaking the truth. But they're fake. That's why they're taking so long. They're trying to figure out how much they got to fake it. It's all a fraud. And what the only thing that's as disgusting is the Democrats doing all of this voter fraud is the Republicans pretending like they're not. Let's say it again. I mean, yeah, you got a few that pointed out, but they're those fringe guys. The Republicans as a whole, as a party, has Mitch McConnell, the Senate Republican leader, has he come out and said anything about all of this obvious fraud? No, because the Republicans, by and large, pretend like the Democrats aren't doing it. Sickening. I don't have to hear it anymore, at least for a little bit. This election is over. I don't care. They're still trying to keep it going because they got these, you know, they're dragging it out. They're dragging it out for like weeks now. You know, well, we're going to know who won the Senate race and that's going to decide. I don't care. You know, does anybody think that Mitch McConnell, if he became the Senate leader, is going to be the majority in the Senate? Do you really think the Republicans are going to do something breathtaking? Like change the speed limit? No, they're not. They're not going to do anything that breathtaking. They're going to do anything. You're still going to get the same old shit. If anything, they're going to agitate for war harder. For World War III, they're just going too soft. They'll probably demand that Joe Biden hire John Bolton to be in charge. To be in charge of like, is the Secretary of State. I hate this system. I'm not going to sit here on this show and waste my breath and waste your time acting like I love the democracy, because I don't. This is my personal opinion. I don't. It's a shame. I mean, I wouldn't really care if, like, they actually represented the people, but they don't. I don't know how people go around. You know, it makes me sick because, like I say, you spot the marketing when you look for it. Local news comes on, does their election segment leading up to the election. You know, 2022, the voters decide. The voters don't decide shit. Okay? Go to your local congressman. Who do you think he cares about? The guy who's giving him $10,000 or your sorry ass with your one little chanky vote? And now that we got this magic, just a regular program of voter fraud on a wide scale, I don't know. You know, I mean, why? Why does anybody sit around like, well, at least we have the democracy? Yes, the democracy is defined as a predetermined outcome as you vote for your pre-selected candidates. Very sickening. I don't know. I don't. Because if you had a king, a hereditary king, even if he was a real asshole, you know, you'd know whose fault it is. Y'all would be like, well, things are bad. The economy sucks. And it's because we have this king and he's a real asshole. We'd know where to put the blame. But you know what they do under this system? None of these guys ever takes the blame. It's never the president's fault. It's never the Congress's fault. It's never the Senate's fault. It's never the bureaucracy. The millions and millions of federal workers. It's not their fault. At the end of the day, they say, what? What's your fault? No, seriously, they say, it's your fault. It's your fault. You should vote for different people. If you don't like it, then vote for somebody to vote for change. Vote for it. It just really pisses me off. No, really, because they go up there. These people go up there and they get these positions of power. And what do? Whatever the hell they want to. They do what their owners tell them. Yeah. The borrower is subject to the lender. The politician is subject to the donor. And what do they say? When you point out the injustice in the land, when you point out that, you know, we don't want any of this. We don't want World War III with Russia and China. We don't want World War III for gay anal in the Ukraine. We want to be able to buy gas for our cars. We want to be able to afford our groceries. And they tell us, well, they're too bad. If you don't like it, vote for somebody else. It's your fault. If you don't like the direction of the country, buddy, then you're probably voting wrong. You see, it's your fault. You don't even get to point to the king and say it's his fault because he's an asshole. It's your fault. You're the asshole because you're not voting right somehow, some way. Even though entire history of voting is nobody gets what they want, you're still supposed to play along because dun, 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 2022, the voters decide. Oh, hallelujah, it's over. Well, it's not over because, like I said, we're still vote counting because for some reason we no longer can get the results the same day. No longer. We got to figure out how much to cheat, how much fraud. And don't you dare point it out. If you do say it, that could become a crime. They're working on that. They're threatening that. Biden says he's about had it with these vote deniers, these election deniers. I don't know what had it's going to account to. I'm assuming at some point the FBI is going to come visit you, maybe put you in jail, charges against you for not loving the democracy hard enough, for questioning the sanctity. And I love how they switch back and forth, don't you love the way they switch back and forth? Like in 2016 they said the Russians hacked the election, that's how Trump got in there, you know. And then they just did over the, you know, of course that all fizzled, that wound up being nothing. And then in 2020 when they got caught doing like obvious fraud in front of everybody and everybody knew it was obvious fraud in front of everybody, then they said, that's a conspiracy theory. Our elections are so secure, there's no way anybody could cheat. You see, there's no way anybody could meddle with the election because the election is like Fort Knox. You can't touch it. The sanctity of our holy elections cannot be touched. And then they go back and forth. They tell us that then they wound up this election and they were talking about the Republicans sweeping in. They were saying, what? Russia's actually trying to meddle with the election again, you see. But now we can go back now that they went ahead and did enough cheating to where the red wave didn't happen. Now they go back to saying, don't question it because the elections are sacred and holy and nobody can touch them. Nobody can mess with them again. That's how you can always tell when somebody's lying to you. They got to keep changing the story back and forth because they're lying. Lying to you. We're wrapped up the election season, thank goodness. Oh, God, I hate it. I'm done voting. I voted for Trump in 2016. You know, I did the Trump vote thing. And that was all fun. Those were good times. But after the election fraud in 2020, I'm done. If they held an election, because now, you know, the people voting, that's what allows them, you know, to try to make the fraud at least not look. You see the spike up and then they level it. They don't just keep it spiking up because that'd be too obvious. They're trying to keep everybody bought into the system. Imagine if they held an election and nobody showed up. Now, that would be a revolutionary thing. How do you fraud that? If they had a voter, they just, I'm on the scene of the polling station and there's like nobody back there, you know? If they had like 2% turnout in the entire nation for the most important election ever, that would be a vote. That would be a vote that might say something. We need to get into the Christian specific segment this week. We got a great topic for that. If you're new around these parts, I encourage you to listen, whether you believe it or not. Especially this, I think we're going to have a really good topic this week. So even if I say it every week, but this week especially, even if you're not like a Christian believer, I really encourage you to stick around and listen to this week's discussion. I think you'll get something out of it. Maybe not. But either way, we got to get in there and get that going. So, yeah, without much further ado, let's go ahead. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. So for our discussion this week, we're going to go all the way back to the book of Genesis, and we're going to once again use a story that everybody is pretty much familiar with, and I really mean everybody. I think even the most casual Christian is familiar with the story, and honestly, if you're a non-believer, you're probably familiar with the story, and that, of course, is going to be the story of Cain and Abel from Genesis 4. Now, again, you may be familiar with the story. This is another one of those cases. I think we can get into something that everybody's very familiar with. And as we delve into it, really find some angles that perhaps we haven't really thought about. That's always the goal here, to be thought-provoking, to where, you know, we think about these things in a maybe a different manner. And more importantly, perhaps, we're gonna apply the story of Cain and Abel to the world around us today. More specifically, we're going to apply the attitude of Cain. We're really going to focus on Cain in the story, because the attitude of Cain can be applied to other people, to people we see in the world around us. And that'll make sense as we go along. But yeah, our focus as we go through, because we're going to go ahead and start reading. We're going to be in Genesis 4, chapter 4, verses 1 through 10. And again, our focus is going to be on Cain's attitude as we go through this story. And Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bare Cain, and said, I've gotten a man from the Lord. And she again bare his brother, Abel. And Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. And in process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought the fruit of the ground an offering unto the Lord. And Abel he also brought of the firstlings of his flock and of the fat thereof. And the Lord had respect unto Abel and to his offering. But unto Cain and to his offering he had not respect, and Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell. And the Lord said unto Cain, Why art thou wroth, and why is thy countenance fallen? If thou doest well, shalt thou not be accepted. And if thou doest not well, sin lieth at the door, and unto thee shall be his desire, and thou shalt rule over him. And Cain talked with Abel, his brother. And it came to pass, when they were in the field, that Cain rose up against Abel his brother and slew him. And the Lord said unto Cain, Where is Abel thy brother? And he said, I know not. Am I my brother's keeper? And he said, What hast thou done? The voice of thy brother's blood crieth unto me from the ground. Again, there's a lot. There's a lot here to go over. There's a lot to unpack. And as we go through this and really take a hard look at it and delve into it, again, we're going to find, by the time we're done, we're going to be looking at Cain's attitude and applying it to what we see in the world, because this can be applied to many people around us today. Now Cain, he brings his sacrifice to the Lord of what he has tilled of the ground. Say he has grown a plot of vegetables, and he's taken a portion of the vegetables and he's brought it before the Lord as a sacrifice. Now Abel, of course, brings of his flock a sacrifice out of the flock. And the Lord, it tells us, the Lord isn't really happy. He's not, he basically dismisses Cain's sacrifice, but acknowledges that of Abel. And this, of course, stirs up Cain. Now, I want to first off look at, I think we should look at Cain's sacrifice. Now, you've got a whole field full of vegetables, and you gather up a basket of them and bring them to the Lord. Because it, like, if you just pass over this, like if the last time you really thought about this story was when you were in Sunday school, maybe as a kid or whatever, and you're thinking, well, you know, he was a tiller of the ground. He brought part of his crop into the Lord. Why was the Lord not satisfied with it? Because it wasn't an actual sacrifice. There was no real sacrifice here. And we see that people want the Lord to do, but they don't want to do any actual sacrificing for the Lord. They're fine with going to church on a Sunday and spending an hour and doing him things, but they don't want to adjust or change anything in their lives for the Lord. Well, that would inconvenience me. Well, people might look at me funny. They don't want to make an actual sacrifice. This was the problem with Cain's service. It wasn't an actual sacrifice. He took a bushel of carrots or whatever that he had grown, but he still had a whole field. It wasn't an actual sacrifice. Nothing was actually really given up. Nothing was actually, he didn't feel the sting of the sacrifice. Where with Abel, he did. Now, you could sit here too and say, well, maybe Cain just didn't want to be cruel to animals, but we see right through that. Because you see where Cain's heart is. See, the moment his pride got pricked, then he got pissed. It says Cain was wroth because the Lord snubbed his sacrifice but was pleased with Abel's. See, this again shows it wasn't an actual sacrifice. He wasn't presenting anything to the Lord. Maybe he thought he was going to get something, but it wasn't actually, you know, here, Lord, this is, I present this to you. Please be happy. I love you, O God. And here, you know, this is, I know it doesn't really count for much. This is what I can give back to you. That's not what he was doing. His number one thing for him was his pride, because we see it here. He gives a sacrifice and it's like, whatever. But once his pride gets pricked, once he gets his pride stuck, all of a sudden, now we see an emotional reaction. He's mad because the Lord snubbed his sacrifice. And what does he do? I mean, what's the reaction here? The over-the-top reaction, because we all get our pride hurt, you know? You're wagey, you're doing your wagey job, and you're doing a good job, and you're working with some guy who's like, I don't know, a sloth or whatever. And then, like, you know, the company, the once a year company dinner comes around and the sloth gets the same recognition or worship, more recognition than you, and your pride gets hurt. You're like, I work harder in this outfit than anybody. And we're up here talking about like Mr. Sloth over there is doing the same job I am. Well, that's BS. You know, but there's a scale here. That's normal. You know, your pride gets hurt, and that's normal. But what we see with Cain here is he doesn't have a normal reaction. When your pride gets hurt, you don't go after the company dinner and tell Mr. Sloth, let's go behind the restaurant, I want to tell you something, and you stab him with a knife. You take a bottle and beat him over the head until he quits breathing. That's not what you do, but you see, that's what Cain did. See, Cain's pride got got hurt, and now we see where his heart really lied. It never was with the Lord to begin with. The sacrifice to the Lord was never actually there. Because it's like, whatever, here's some vegetables, God, be happy with that. But oh, we see the reaction when his pride gets hurt, don't we? Over the top. Calls his brother to have a visit and kills his brother. And then the Lord comes around. See, the Lord's always going to come around. See, he had Abel out there in the field. There wasn't nobody around. And he kills his brother. I don't know what he did with the body. Killed his brother. Hid the body. But the Lord always comes around. That's how it works. People, you know, the Lord is always going to come around. People think they get away with this and get away with that, and they're doing all sorts of wickedness and evil and underhandedness and even killing people. And they hide the body and they think they're going to get away with it. But see, eventually the Lord comes around. Now, the Lord comes around, and you notice this in the book of Genesis. God will ask rhetorical questions, right? I mean, earlier in the book of Genesis, after Adam and Eve had partaken of the forbidden fruit, God goes walking through the garden and he says, "Adam, where are you?" Well, God knows where Adam's at. He said, "Where are you, man? You know, where are you? Where are you at? What are you doing?" And once again, here we see God ask the rhetorical question. "Where's your brother?" He already knows. "Where's your brother?" Cain's reaction is his attitude is summed up right here. "Am I my brother's keeper? Am I my brother's keeper? Is it my job to keep up with my brother? Is it my job to tend to my brother?" Oh, we're going to get into this. We're going to get into this as we go along through here. Am I my brother's keeper? What's it to me what my brother is doing? And of course, the Lord reveals that it was simply a rhetorical question. "Your brother's blood cries out from the ground to me. You haven't gotten away with anything. I know what you've done already." Now, if God knows, he could have interceded and stopped it. But see, this is an early demonstration, once again, that we have free will. Man has free will. You know, God didn't kill Abel. Cain killed Abel of his own free will. He had the free will to make that decision, and he made that decision. God comes along and says, "Where's your brother?" "I'm my brother's keeper. What's it to me? It's not my job to keep up with him. I don't know. You go find him." Dude, his blood cries out. The earth is crying out with his blood. "I already know what you've done." Where Cain had offered vegetables to the Lord, he offered up a blood sacrifice of his brother to his own pride. Let that sink in. You've got to make that point before we move on here. Where Cain offered nothing but vegetables to the Lord, he made a blood sacrifice of his own brother, a human sacrifice, to his own pride. Too often we hear the admonitions and the warnings in the Bible against idolatry and following other gods. And we get this vision in our head that always means, like, I don't know, some kind of little stone or wood statue that we set up in the corner and bow down to or something. But you see, idolatry and false gods can come in many forms. Cain offered up a blood sacrifice to the god of his pride, of his own pride. Now this response, "Am I my brother's keeper?" I think this really, in a lot of ways, this encapsulates the attitude of Cain. And I think with this statement, with this retort, I think you can see this attitude, and you can sum it up in so many people today. "Am I my brother's keeper?" I was thinking about this before doing the show, before recording today. And I was thinking about this very matter earlier in the week. And I was thinking of ways that "am I my brother's keeper?" How that's applied. how it can be applied in so many different ways. And just as one of the best examples, okay, one of the best examples I can think of is one of these things that gets covered a lot here on Radio Albion and in the culture wars around us. And that is this topic of these child drag queens. I know y'all are tired of hearing about that topic. I'm tired of talking about it, honestly. But we bear with me because we're not really talking about that per se. We're just going to use that as our illustration of the attitude of Cain. And I think it really helps because we're going to talk about all of the different aspects, all of the different people that surround this phenomenon. Okay, all of this, all of the different people, the different, specifically the different adults in these children's lives that have the attitude of Cain, whether you're talking about child, you know, promoting transgenderism in children, or you're talking about the drag queen child parades or whatever they're doing at the story time and having a drag show for little kids. And I realize that those are not necessarily one and the same thing, but we're going to purposely put them together to make our point this week. So again, stick with me on that. What really got me started with this is we've seen those videos of this woman doctor, for example, and I'm sure she's not the only one, but it's one of the things that has gone viral on the internet and we've seen posted around, is this woman doctor who does these double mastectomies, removes the breasts of these young girls, and she makes a joke of it. I'm pretty sure, like I say, you got to be on the internet to listen to the show, and I'm pretty sure you're on the internet, you've seen those videos. And it's absolutely disgusting, is it not? You have these young girls, you have these young girls that if they're 13, 14 years old, and if they went in to the vape shop and tried to buy vape juice, they would be told, no, you're not mature enough to make a decision like that. You have to wait till you're 21, but you're totally mature enough to go ahead and have your breasts cut off. This is the society we live in. And this woman doctor, she makes a mockery of this. She's in her video, she's making jokes about how many she's cutting off, how many double mastectomies she's doing. For a grown woman who's battles breast cancer, this has to be insulting. No, it really does. It's got to be insulting because you have women who have serious breast cancer and they have to go through this procedure. I mean, they have to. I've done two cancer surgeries this past year. You know, and when that's what you got to do, it's what you got to do. Now, I'm fortunate that unless I happen to be wearing a pair of shorts, which you're not going to catch me in, or going without a shirt, which once again, you're not going to catch me in, you can't tell that I've had two cancer surgeries this year. But see, for a woman, it is different. She knows. I mean, yes, she can put prosthetics on, but she knows. You know, this is a very tough thing. You know, a woman who battles breast cancers and she has to get double mastectomy. She has to get both her breasts cut off to try to remove the cancer. And you've got this woman doctor here making a big joke about she's cutting off these perfectly healthy breasts of these young girls because she's making money on it. Let's don't let them sugarcoat it anymore. Oh, we're doing this to affirm their gender. No, she's not. She's doing it because she's getting paid. She's getting paid to do this. And if confronted on it, what is this woman? What is someone like this likely to say? Well, they want it. Am I this child's keeper? You can see the attitude of Cain. What's it to me? I'm not their keeper. This is what they said they want. This is what I'm doing. You know, this doctor knows, this woman knows, and every other of these doctors doing this to these young people knows that this is wrong. They know what's wrong and they're doing it for money. How do they ease their conscience? How would they respond if someone looked at them across a dinner and said, hey, by the way, how do you live with yourself? What kind of people do doctors like this woman, this smug woman on the internet, what kind of people do they have in their life? Because like if I knew this person, like if they were a relative of mine and we got together over the holidays, I'm sitting across the table, I would have to look at them and I would say, so how do you live with yourself? I'm just curious. I'm not being accusatory. I'm just asking, how do you live with yourself? I think their response is, I think it's reasonable to assume their response will be, they wanted it. I'm not these kids' keeper, and I'm getting paid. See the attitude of Cain. Am I this child's keeper? What's it to me? I'm getting paid. Look at this. I got a million views. I got a million views on my TikTok or whatever the hell over this. These people live for attention. They don't even care if it's negative attention. They just live for the attention. These young people, whether you're talking about these young girls getting both their breasts removed, whether you're talking about young boys going on all these hormones and even having their lower body parts removed, you know, it comes down to it. These doctors aren't doing this because they want to help them affirm themselves or to better their lives. Let's be honest. If you're in Europe, you may not understand. Let me tell you, everything in the American healthcare industry is a hustle for money. All my American listeners who dealt with the healthcare system are sitting here nodding their head. Let me tell you what, they don't give a shit about gender-affirming care or helping this young person deal with who they really are. They don't care about any of that. The entire healthcare industry, like everything else in America, is a money hustle, okay? Let's be honest. These people are doing it. For the money. They're doing it because they're getting paid. I remember seeing an article, and y'all probably saw it too, about one of these big healthcare outfits. I think one of their memos or something got leaked where they were discussing about, you know, how much money they're making off of this. Well, they're expanding facilities. Everybody else can't afford food, can't afford to keep gas in their car. But hey, the healthcare industry is expanding. We just had to make new victims. We just had to make a new problem to fix. Who cares if these young people's lives are destroyed? Am I these kids' keeper? What's it to me? Oh, we're not done. We're not done with this. You think we're done? Because they're not the only ones. Where are the parents? Where are the parents of these young boys who have been put on female hormones, who have been convinced to be transgender? These young women. These young girls who are having their breasts removed, something that can't be undone. Where are the parents? Well, usually you find a single mom. Again, we're not trying to sugarcoat. We're not woman bashing. We're just calling the truth. The truth. Usually it's a single mom. And where's she at? She's posting it up on her social media for more likes, you see. She's sacrificing her child on the altar of her own pride. Does that ring a bell? I got 500 likes because, you see, my child is transgender and I'm supporting her getting both her breasts cut off. And you imagine, because there's been cases of these young people now, you know, and we're going to have more of this as they get older. This is a fairly relatively new thing. And already we're having some people in their 20s that, you know, I guess at the early beginnings of this, you know, who are like, what has happened? What have you done? What has been done to me? I was 13. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I could have just as easily woke up the next day and decided I wanted to be an astronaut. What the hell? Now, you know, one of the things that drives me crazy in society is I think we tend to coddle young people when they reach adolescence a little too much. But you are responsible as a parent. Look, you're responsible enough to know that a 13 or 14 year old should not be making life changing decisions such as this. I imagine the reaction of one of these young people, male or female, is irrelevant. One of these young people who's had their lives ruined, that wakes up one day and they're in their 20s or 30s or whenever the hell. And they say, you know what? I didn't have gender dysphoria. I was just a maladjusted kid that didn't fit in. I was just a maladjusted kid that didn't have friends, okay? I was just a maladjusted kid that really, at the end of the day, I was upset because my mom and dad got divorced. I didn't know where I fit in. I felt constantly tugged between the two. I felt like I didn't belong. And all of a sudden, I was told this is where I belonged, you see. And all of a sudden, I got all of this attention. I imagine one of these kids as an adult looking at their single mom and saying, why? why did you do this? And what, and you know, and again, we're just kind of having to imagine the response, but it's not hard to imagine. Who the hell sacrifices their kid on the altar of their own pride for the sake of likes on social media? Who the hell does that? I imagine one of these women in the future being confronted by their now adult child says, why did you do this? Why did you let me do this? Why did you take me to people to have them do this to me? Well, baby, you wanted it. In other words, am I my child's keeper? Am I my child's keeper? I got all these likes. Let's go back. Let's go back and look at how many likes, how many follows I got on Twitter for this. How many rainbow transgender flags I was able to put up because I got your tits cut off, honey. You know, sacrifices got to be made. You can't make a social media omelet without breaking a few eggs, baby. We're going to keep going. We're going to keep going. We can keep doing this thing. We can keep doing this thing. Am I my brother's keeper? Am I my child's keeper? Am I my brother's keeper? The attitude of Cain. We've done several shows on the Daily Nationalist here. A big thing they use. And these things get promoted to destroy the culture. We know that. We get told there's a reason we hear about these things. They're not just being done quietly and nobody knows. There's a reason they're blasted from the rooftop. They want us to know they're doing these things. While there's a larger evil at force here, once again, whether you're talking about God or whether you're talking about the devil, man has free will. Man has free will. The devil doesn't, I always say, the devil doesn't make you do shit. The devil can make the worst option sound really appealing, but at the end of the day, you've got free will. Now, we do these stories, we've talked about these stories multiple times, drag queen story time, or now drag queen story time has turned into quote unquote family friendly drag shows, which usually seem to incorporate kids dressing up in drag and flailing about, usually for a homosexual male audience. Now, and this is, this is a little bit of a different angle, you know, from what we just talked about. But again, we can apply, this is where we can apply that same attitude of Cain to it, can't we? They have these family-friendly drag shows, and we do these shows, and others do shows, and it gets reported on social media for the few accounts that aren't banned, and people get outraged. And you've had people protest. You know, you have a gay bar somewhere. I think there was one over here in Dallas here a while back did one of these. A gay bar somewhere, and they have a quote-unquote family-friendly drag show, and these kids are up there, and they dress them all up and put makeup all over their face and hypersexualize a little boy who's like 8, 9 years old and have them prance around, and all these male homosexuals can look at them and take pictures so that they can go home and masturbate to them later. Let's be honest about what's happening here. That's what that is, okay? You know, they take these pictures, they're making this parade of this, and all of their male audience can later go home and fantasize about sexual activity with these little boys and masturbate to them. That's what's happening. Parents don't want to think about that. The people celebrating that don't want to think about that. They don't want you to think about that. But that's what's happening. We have cases where people get mad and they go and protest, you know, and they have to have all this armed security. And people are angry at the homosexuals present. And they're angry at the gay bar. You know, when they say, oh, they go in interview and they always say the same thing. We've received all of these threats. They never actually show us any of the threats, but they say they've received all these threats. And maybe they have. I'm not saying they haven't received any. But we always hear they received these threats, and you know, and people are out there and they vent their anger at the gay bar and at the homosexuals there. And again, understandably so. But let me tell you something. The homosexuals there in the gay bar didn't go abduct the kids, did they? They didn't go out there with an ice cream truck and then ding, 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 with ice truck. I couldn't think of the ice cream truck music there for just a minute. If I wasn't lazy, I would edit in some ice cream truck music right there. But I'm lazy. I don't feel like it. I'm on a roll. And go out with an ice cream truck and get these little boys to come up there and say, hey, kid, you want a free ice cream sandwich and a wig? We're giving away ding dongs and dildos. Get on board, kid. And they dump these kids and duct tape them and zip tie them and take them down to the gay bar and have them put on a drag show. I mean, say what you want to, but the gay bar and the homosexuals present are not doing that. They're being brought down there by their parents, or normally, once again, and I'm not women bashing, but we've seen the picture. Once again, usually parent as in single mom. Sometimes, not always. The parents bring them down there. Their supposed guardian brings them down there. Okay? Imagine being a parent. And you take your little boy down there so that he can be sexualized. And that's what all that putting the makeup on and the short, you put on these deals and make them look like, you know, a female form and have them prance around so homosexual men can look at them to masturbate to them at some point in the future. Imagine being a parent and doing that. I can't. Can you? God, I hope not. I just can't imagine what goes through somebody's mind. But you see, in their mind, at some point of the day, they say, am I my child's keeper? They said they wanted to go down here. They saw this at school. They said they wanted to go down here. Of course, that usually is just salve for the conscience. They wanted to bring them down there. You see, they wanted the virtue signaling points. Once again, they're sacrificing their child. Yeah, you know, my kid's going to go be masturbation material for homosexuals. But you know what? Everybody's going to pat me on the back when I post this up on my Facebook page and tell me how tolerant and how open and how progressive and how understanding I am. And at the end of the day, am I really my child's keeper? I convinced them to say they wanted to do this anyway. So what's it to me? What's it to me? Am I my own child's keeper? And you know what? It's even worse when it's not single moms. You know, because like if you see one of this going on and you got this kid, you see these stories about them doing this to these kids and you see a mom and a dad there. Okay, you're looking at this man. You're looking at this man. And I'll tell you what I'm thinking. I'm thinking one of two things is going on here. A, this guy has a weird fetish about being humiliated by his wife. And there's nothing I can imagine for a man being more humiliated than having his son feminized to be a sexual object for homosexual men. I can't imagine anything. And you see these people that get off on, I don't know, dressing up like a dog and being led around in public on a leash on their hands and knees. That's not as degrading as having your son being treated like this. So they've either got that going on, or B, they themselves are probably abusing that child. Oh, you can't just say, we just said it. I'm tired of, oh, you can't just say that. You might hurt some. You can't. Why? Why can't we say that? We speak the truth. We get accused of all sorts of nonsense all the time. Doesn't seem to be a problem with that. And it's just nonsense. We're not accusing anybody of nonsense. We're calling a spade a spade. If there's a man in the household and he's this child's supposed father, or maybe stepfather, whatever the case may be, if there's a quote-unquote father figure in the house and he's okay with bringing his son down to be masturbatory material for homosexual men, he's got to, because that's what his wife wants to do, then he's got two things going. He's got one of two things going on. He either gets off on being humiliated by his wife, or he himself is enjoying that. Calling a spade, folks. It's time to quit putting up with this. Am I my child's keeper? Oh, we can keep going with this. Where are these parents? Where's the single mom? Where is the mom and dad? If they go to church, do they go to a church? A certain proportion of these people probably attend an MCC every other Sunday or once a month or maybe even every week. Where's the pastor? Where's the minister when they come waiting at the front door? Where's the minister waiting at the front door of the church greeting people as they come in? And here comes this bitch who had her kid last weekend dressing up at the drag show. Where's the minister to stop her at the door and say, bitch, where do you think you're going? Well, I'm coming to church. No, you ain't. You ain't coming to church here. Where are the ministers? Where are the preachers? Where are the church leaders? Where are the church leaders? Where's the minister to pull this kid's dad aside and say, so, are you molesting this kid? Oh, that would make people uncomfortable. We can't do that. Are you molested? Why would you? Why are you okay with taking your kid? Oh, well, you know, I mean, it's just a fun time for me. Are you molesting this kid? Are you sexually abusing this child? You know, this question needs to be asked. How dare you? What would the minister say? What do the preachers say? Am I the keeper of my congregation? I'm not these child. It's not my kid. Am I these child's keeper? Am I the keeper of these people? Yes. Yes, actually you are. You're their minister. You're their preacher. You're the church elder. You're the whatever. Yes, you're actually. So that's why you're referred to as shepherds by Jesus Christ himself. You're supposed to be tending the flock. That's literally your job. Yes, you are their keeper. That is the shepherd's job, is to tend the flock. Where are you at? Well, I'm not the flock. Can you imagine hiring a shepherd? Your job is stay out here with the flocks, make sure nothing eats them, make sure they don't wander off. That's your one job. You show up and ain't no sheep around, and the wolves are laying over there chewing on their bones, and you're like, oh, what the hell have you been doing? Am I the keeper of these sheep? Well, yes, literally you are, and nothing. Where's the social pressure? Where's the grandparents to say, what the hell are you doing? Taking my grandchild to be dressed up, to be sexualized in front of a bunch of homosexual men. What are you doing? What the hell? Am I my grandchild's keeper? What's it to me? I don't want to make things socially awkward. I'm not even saying you got to go around and I don't know, be abrasive to everybody or something. But for goodness sake, at some point in time, is anybody these kids' keeper? Is anybody look? Apparently not. Apparently not. Because at the end of the day, they're sacrifice. Whether they're trannifying these kids, whether they're putting them in the drag show, you know, it's a common denominator. What's it all about? Why are these parents doing this? For the sacrifice of their own pride, for the sacrifice of likes on social. What a cheap price. Imagine being one of these young people, okay? Imagine being one of these young people and you grow up and your breasts are now cut off or your pecker's now missing. Your pecker's missing. Because when you were 14, your mom, you know, took you down to this doctor and convinced you and patted you on the back and gave you this attention, and you didn't know, and you just went along with this because you were young and dumb and you were confused. And imagine realizing that at the end of the day, your life was ruined. Your life was destroyed. Your life was sacrificed. You were a living human sacrifice. How much? How much were you sacrificed for, you know, $58 million? You know, did they sacrifice you so that you could, you know, so that they would be financially set? You know, honestly, that would be more forgivable. No, straight up, that would be more forgivable. I think, you know, I'm just guessing. I can't put myself in other people's shoes. But I think it'd be more forgivable if you was one of these and you looked and it's like, well, my parents did this to me. And the reason they did it is because they were really, really poor. And like they couldn't afford food to eat. And they got offered $6 million to do this to me. And it ended their financial. They were just desperate. You know, you could kind of have some room in your heart to forgive for that. Because at least you could say, well, you know, times were tough. I mean, it still sucks for me, but times were tough. At least there was a decent price attached to. Imagine being one of these young people growing up, and it's like, what were you sacrificed for? What was the price for your entire life? Now, I'm not saying their lives are over, but I mean, let's be honest. I mean, their lives are not what they were meant to be. Their lives will never be, what the potential for their life was at the beginning. In other words, before this happened to them, they had this potential. And now it's limited. The young woman's probably sterile. And if by some miracle she's not sterile, she's never going to know the joy of breastfeeding her own child because that was taken away from her. I mean, if she's fortunate, she can still have a child, but it's not going to be. She's not going to be able to breastfeed it. It's gone. And imagine the price. What'd you get? $6 million? $50 million? It still wouldn't be worth it to you. But what was the price? And imagine. The answer being, well, at one point in time, I got 150 likes on Facebook. That's what I sacrificed your entire life for, kid. 150 likes on some. 150 likes. Put yourself for a minute. I don't know. I'm an empathetic person. I really am. In fact, sometimes to a fault, I tend to put myself in other people's shoes. Probably at times when I shouldn't be as empathetic as I am. But seriously, put yourself in that person's shoes and let that sink in. Let that go into your mind for a minute. One time I got 150. I was posting about you at the drag show. I was posting about you right after your double mastectomy. And I was talking about how it was so great because I supported you in mutilating your own body when you really had no idea what the hell you were doing because you were like 14 years old. But look here, kid, I got 150 likes. I can't even tell you who those people were that quote unquote liked it. But I got that. It was totally worth it for me. Maybe not for you, but that's not my problem because after all, I may be your parent, but am I my child's keeper? I'm going to wrap up on that note. It's all around us. Patterns. You see patterns in the Bible, Old Testament, New Testament, because human nature doesn't really change. The nature of sin doesn't really change. The devil's playbook doesn't really change. And you can take these things, and as we have today, we look at the story of Cain and Abel, and it's just like you read through it, and it's like, okay, that happened. But you don't realize that you can take this and apply it to the world around us. Why? Because the nature remains the same. The nature of sin remains the same. I got to stop there, because otherwise we're going to wind up with like a 3-hour show. I just go on and fired up on it. But you're welcome to continue on your own time thinking about this and thinking about how this applies to the world around us, so many people in the world around us. But we're going to go ahead and get on out of here. Thank you for joining us this week. Thank you again for those who aren't shy. Pay your tithes. It really appreciate it. It makes a difference for me. It really, really does. I do appreciate it. Don't forget, I am on Fridays with Sven Longshanks for the Friday installment of the Daily Nationalist. We usually have a fun, light. We try to have a lighthearted discussion to end out the week, you know, not so black-pilled. Even though the topics can be black-pilling, perhaps, we do try to take a funny take on it, which luckily for me is kind of my forte. So, you know, be sure and join us for that. And as I say every week, be sure and come back next week and join us right here for the Parish of the Patriots.